Welcome to S&C Critical Insights. I'm Jeanette Bander, a partner in S&C's Executive Compensation Group, and I'm joined today by Annie Ostrager, the co-head of our Labor and Employment Group and a member of our Corporate Culture, Workplace Investigations and Whistleblower Litigation Group, and Criminal Defense and Investigations Group. On April 19th, we discussed non-compete agreements and previewed that we'd provide an update after the FTC voted on its long-anticipated non-compete rule. As expected, on April 23rd, the FTC adopted, by a vote of 3-2 along partisan lines, a final rule containing a sweeping ban on non-competes. Annie, can you give an overview of that rule?
Yes, good to be back with you to talk about this topic, which has attracted a lot of attention over the last few days. The final rule, if it goes into effect, would prevent employers from entering into new non-compete agreements that operate after the conclusion of employment and would also prevent enforcement of existing non-compete clauses against employees who are not senior executives as defined by the rule. The final rule also prevents employers from even suggesting to a worker that they may be subject to a non-compete clause. The rule is also retroactive in its effect, except for with respect to senior executives and where there's an existing dispute over the enforceability of an existing non-compete agreement. A senior executive is defined by the rule as a person who earned at least $151,164 in total annualized compensation in the preceding year and who works in a policymaking position, which is defined as a business entity's president, chief executive officer or equivalent, or any other officer of a business entity who has policymaking authority. Policymaking authority is in turn defined as final authority to make policy decisions that control significant aspects of a business entity or common enterprise. The final rule is quite broad and makes it clear that the FTC views anything that could be characterized as operating as a non-compete in practice as a prohibited non-compete clause. This means that even agreements not characterized as non-competes could get swept up in this definition, such as forfeiture for competition clauses or other similar agreements that impose financial consequences on a former employee as a result of accepting other work or starting a business after the end of their employment. The rule, though, does have some exceptions and limitations. Jeanette, can you talk through those?
Yes. The rule excludes non-disclosure or non-solicitation agreements that do not function to prevent workers from accepting new work or starting a business after they leave their job, garden leave provisions, or restrictions that are effective solely during a worker's term of employment. The rule also does not apply to non-compete clauses entered into pursuant to a bona fide sale of a business entity, of the person's ownership interest in a business entity, or of all or substantially all of a business entity's operating assets. The final rule dropped the proposed rule's limitation on this exception to persons selling at least a 25% ownership interest in a business entity. Finally, the final rule does not apply to employers who are outside the FTC's jurisdiction, such as certain banks, savings and loan institutions, federal credit unions, common carriers, air carriers, and corporations that are not organized to carry on a business for their own profit or that of their members. Although the FTC does not have jurisdiction to enforce the rule against banks, it took the position in the final rule that bank holding companies, subsidiaries, and other affiliates of federally regulated banks were within the commission's jurisdiction and the rule applied to them. It is unclear how the rule would apply with respect to an individual who is an employee of both a bank and a non-bank entity. Bank regulators may also try to enforce the FTC's rule under their own authority, and private plaintiffs may try to use the rule's implicit determination that non-competes with bank employees are unfair methods of competition in other contexts, such as under state employment laws.
Importantly, each of these exceptions may give rise to challenges to the extent the FTC takes the position that any of these other arrangements operate as functional non-compete agreements and are banned under the rule. This is particularly notable since the FTC pointed to these types of agreements as means by which employers can protect trade secrets and other confidential information.
Under the final rule, notice is required for each existing non-compete clause covered by the rule. This means that any prohibited non-compete that has not expired is covered by the notice requirement. The notice must explain that the worker's non-compete clause will not be, and cannot legally be, enforced against the worker. It must be hand-delivered, mailed, emailed, or sent by text message unless no contact information is available. The rule provides model language for the notice and a safe harbor for use of the model language. The notice must be provided by the effective date of the rule, which is scheduled to be 120 days after publication in the Federal Register, but litigants have already sought a stay of this rule. This notice requirement is one aspect of the rule that employers may be able to avoid or at least defer depending on the outcome of litigation that has already been filed.
Yes, that's right. Multiple cases have already been filed, including the Chamber of Commerce versus FTC in the Eastern District of Texas, in which Sullivan and Cromwell represents the Chamber and the Business Roundtable, and in which a stay, as Jeanette referenced, has been sought. In these cases, plaintiffs raised challenges to the rule, including that the FTC lacks authority under its cited bases for issuing the rule, sections 5 and 6G of the FTC Act, to issue regulations prescribing unfair methods of competition, that under the major questions doctrine, agencies need clear authority to take actions with significant economic or political significance, and that even if the FTC did have the authority to implement the rule, it would be an unconstitutional delegation of congressional legislative power to executive branch agencies to promulgate this rule. Jeanette, can you wrap up with some guidance on next steps and considerations given the current landscape?
Sure. Until the rule becomes effective, there's no categorical federal ban on entering into non-competes. So the state-by-state regime we discussed last time remains in effect. Employers should be mindful that the rule will not retroactively invalidate non-competes entered into with senior executives prior to the effective date of the rule. To the extent that an employer is entering into any such agreement, it may want to expressly acknowledge in the agreement that the individual meets the requirements for the senior executive exception so there is no disagreement in the future. Absent a stay of the rule, employers may want to prepare for potential effectiveness of the rule, including by inventorying existing non-competes that would be subject to the rule's notice requirements, reviewing templates of employment agreements and policies to identify potential modification of terms, including assessing the scope of non-solicitation and non-disclosure agreements to ensure that their terms do not constitute functional non-competes, and at the same time adequately protect confidential information, and considering alternatives to non-competes, like garden leave provisions that run concurrent with employment.
For more on all of this, you can listen to our longer webinar on this topic, which will be available on our firm's website, or be in touch with us directly. And for more information about our practices, please visit us on the web at www.sulcrom.com. Thank you for listening to S&C Critical Insights.